And my guest this afternoon is Chris Pullen, and he joins me now. Good afternoon, Chris.
Good afternoon.
And thank you for coming in.
A pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Now, you've written this very interesting, it sounds very interesting, book. Can you tell us a little bit about what it's called and what it's all about?
It's called A Short History of Winfrith Newburgh, and it takes the history from about 3 million years BC to 1929. And it stops there.
Well, I've driven past, I've driven through Winfrith Newburgh, but I didn't realise it had so much interest in history. It's done a lot, hasn't it, that little village?
Over the years, I suspect if you look at the histories of most villages in Dorset, underneath the surface there's been a lot going on. There was a riot, there have been all sorts of upheavals and changes of ownership, many things.
Let's talk about the riot. Now, the riot was before we had the Toll Puddle Martyrs and all that. This was the forerunner of that, wasn't it?
It was all part and parcel of the same thing, where there was a big depression in England after the Napoleonic Wars, and wages were going down. Farm workers were finding it very hard to get by, and so they would petition the farmers and their masters for more pay. And there were riots all over the west of England because they were also bringing in threshing machines, which cut hundreds of jobs. So in Winfrith, on the 28th of November 1830, they all came out, all the farm workers came together and demanded fair pay for all their work.
And what happened to them?
Word got around, and the local JP, James Frampton, who was the judge in the case of the Toll Puddle Martyrs, he assembled, it's told, 150 special constables, armed them with truncheons, and they all marched into Winfrith and met the rioters in the middle of the village, outside what is now the village shop. And they asked them to leave, disperse quietly, but they wouldn't. So James Frampton read the Riot Act, which is probably the first and maybe the last time in Winfrith's history.
Yeah, hence the phrase, reading the Riot Act.
It is, yep, and it actually happened. Yeah. It didn't do a lot of good immediately, because they still stood their ground, and their wives and children were right beside them, behind a hedge, urging them on. But so in the end, the special constables charged, pushed the rioters back. Three of them were arrested. A fourth was arrested, but he wriggled out of his smock frock and he escaped. And in the end, it all ended peacefully. No one was really seriously hurt. And eventually, things got better.
The three that were arrested, did they have any serious consequences?
No. They were very lenient with them. They were all teenagers. All farm workers came up for trial at Dorchester, and they were sentenced to, I think, 6 months imprisonment with hard labour. And after that, they were allowed to go home. But there were, over the whole country, about 20 of the rioters were hanged, and many, many were transported, like the Toll Puddle Martyrs.
Yeah, which was just, a couple of years later, the Toll Puddle Martyrs?
1834, when they had the trial in the Shire Hall, in the courtroom, that's still there.
All this history on our doorstep, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
We should tell people, you're a retired librarian, aren't you?
I am indeed, and so's my wife, Lynn.
Because we should mention, she's helped you a lot with the book as well.
Oh, it wouldn't have happened without her. She arranged the typeface, the type size, the printing, the paper, the illustrations, everything to do with it, sourced the printer, and did so much. It would never have happened without her.
So writing about being a librarian, I guess it's something that maybe was always an ambition. You know, you've worked with books all that time. It must have been like, one day I want my book on the shelf. Being a librarian, I guess it's something that maybe was always an ambition. You know, you've worked with books all that time. It must have been like, one day I want my book on the shelf. Yeah.
Even if we had to do it ourselves, it never really occurred to me. But working with books, I was always fascinated by history. And so over the last few years, I'd keep an eye out for books that had a mention of the village and made notes, copied it all down. And so there was a good store there to start with when I began to write the book.
But this is the first book, you know, about just about Minfrith, isn't it?
It's, yes, yeah. this is the first, and hopefully there will be a sequel to this one, bringing the story from 1929 up to date.
Oh, so you're working on that now?
Not at the moment. I'm still recovering from this one.
But how long has it taken you to write the book?
Overall, about 18 months.
Yeah.
But there were times when I had to walk away from it, or I lost inspiration. Our house got flooded a year last January, so for 6 months we were putting that all back together and sorting our lives out, so that was a big gap.
Yeah, yeah. What, did the village get flooded? Or?
It was area of the village. Mm. Up in School Lane there was flooding, and where we are, a field overflowed, came down to a row of four thatched cottages where we live, came in through the walls, round the sides, in the back, up the gardens.
Yeah.
It could have been a whole lot worse. There was no sewage or anything like that, but
enough. I believe you probably live in quite an old house, isn't it?
It's early 17th century.
Yeah, I wonder if that takes too kindly to being flooded.
It must have been flooded a few more times over 400 years.
Yeah, I guess so.
It coped, but it's got cob walls, so there's always that little bit of moisture there in the cob to keep it from drying out or falling apart.
Mm, great. And you've lived there for about 25 years now?
Yeah.
So a few more years and you'll be a local, won't you?
I'm taking my time, but you never know.
I saw somewhere the name Winfrith Newburgh. Where does that come from?
Well, Winfrith comes from, I believe it was a primitive Welsh for bright stream. Mm. The Newburgh bit, that came from the family that were granted the village and the land around it by Henry I in 1110. They were supporters of William the Conqueror, and as a gift, his youngest son, Henry I, granted supporters, and in this case, the Newburgh family, the land. Ooh. And they kept it till 1515, when the last direct descendant died. He had a daughter, she married, so it went out of the family for about 100 years or more, and then it was bought by a man called Humphrey Weld, who was a London merchant. He was a Catholic, and this, at that time, things were very difficult between Protestants and Catholics and King and Parliament. So he thought it would be as well to get away from London and find somewhere in the country where he might be a bit safer. Mm. And so he bought the Weld Estate.
Yeah, which, I mean, the Weld Estate now is still a pretty big chunk of land, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It is.
Yeah, with Lulworth Cove and Durdledore. Oh. That's all Weld Estate, isn't it, I think?
It is. Yes, yeah. And plenty of farms around as well, I believe.
Yeah, and in fact, you know, you're on route to places like Lulworth and Durdledore, aren't you? You get a lot of traffic going through there for that.
Oh, yes, we do. Particularly on a day like this. The weather, of course, has brought so many people down there. Mm. Many go through Wool and that way down to Lulworth, but quite a few follow their sat-navs, I think, come through the village and then get to Durdledore and down the hill to Lulworth.
Yeah, they can have quite a problem with the parking when they get there, can't they?
Oh, yes.
Yes. And what else? Yeah, it used to be the main road, didn't it, to Dorchester?
It was. It's the track is still there. You can still walk it. But in 1769, a Turnpike Trust, I think it was a Dorchester and Wool Turnpike Trust, was established, and they basically own the road, but were responsible for the upkeep of the road. So they would charge tolls along the road to raise the money. and they found, presumably, they didn't want it to keep going through the village itself because it would be difficult to have a toll house there. People could escape round and not pay the toll. Yeah. So they built a new road that goes now past the Red Lion at the entrance to the village and rejoins the other one past East Knighton. But it's a footpath still that you can walk the entire length of that closed piece.
And it gets a mention in the Domesday Book?
Like virtually every other village in Dorset, I think. Yes, it was lumped in with three other villages. So you've got a general idea of just how much it was worth, how many people lived there, how much land there was. And so, and a fair few other details. It mentions the church and the priest called Boller. And it really was for the king to know just how much his kingdom was worth.
Now, I don't know how you find time to write a book, because you do a lot of other stuff, I see. You're with the Dorchester and Ridgeway Singers and Band, the New Hardy Players, and you've even done some film work for Giles Keating over there at Athelhampton House as well.
That's right.
What was the film work then?
He had a project. It was called 10 Lovers, 50 Poems, and it consists of 50 different segments which where the poem was read, and then there was film to back it to illustrate the poem, and then there was a discussion between academics and Giles to go into a bit more detail about why the poem was written, who it was written about, what was happening in the poem. And then these have all, or they are going to be released on YouTube. About a dozen of them are already available on YouTube, and there's another 40, 50 still to be released. And I believe they're being released fortnightly, so it'll be right through this year, maybe slightly into next year, I don't know. But
and you sing?
No.
Well, you play an instrument then?
I play an instrument, yes.
What do you play?
I play viola.
Oh, right.
So, which is a nice niche instrument because lots of people play violin and play it very well. But when I was at school, the one and only viola player left, and the conductor in the school orchestra said, "Who'd like to take up the viola?" And I thought, for about 2 seconds, put my hand up, never regretted it.
Right. Very good. Like you say, not many people take up the viola. Yeah. So it's a good move.
Ooh.
So writing, when you're self-publishing, is that sort of fairly straightforward? Is it hard work?
It's all falls on, in this case, Lynn and I, to put it all together, to get the layout right, ready for the printers, to get the design cover, the cover right. We had to buy what's called an ISBN, an International Standard Book Number, which every book, if it's going to be sold publicly, should have. And a barcode, and I think that's about it, really. But yes, it was basically, we could give it to the printers ready for them to print.
And you recommend doing that, self-publish?
It's worked for us. I wouldn't say it works for everybody. You're not going to make a million out of it. And you've got to have someone who really knows this stuff about graphic design to get it looking good and feeling good. But the printers, they were very willing to give us advice and help. So it certainly can be done.
Brilliant. And if anybody would like to buy a copy, how can they get hold of a copy?
They can either contact me at home. The phone number is 01305 853 946, or else they can go to Winfrith Village Stores, and we're making sure that there's always copies on sale there. They're right next to the till. You can't miss them.
Absolutely. And if anybody'd like to get in contact for details, I'd be pleased to pass them on as well. When you get the second book, can you come in and tell us all about that one?
I'll be very happy to.
Okay. Thanks for coming in today, Chris. Cheers. Yeah.